Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson.
I am your other host, Casey Clapp, here excited today, Alex.
It's a big one, Case.
We're talking about a tree that I have tattooed on me.
Wow, there it is, huh?
This is it right here. I always like to do this. This is my very first pine cone tattoo.
Really?
Yeah.
What year did you get that?
I got this. It was the last tattoo I got in Seattle, 2016.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you haven't been collecting for that long.
Yeah, not that long. No. It's kind of a new thing.
Right on.
Yeah, I wanted to, historically, I've always gotten a tattoo any place I've lived.
Right.
So I actually was moving out of Seattle, and like I was like, I'm moving in a week. Where can I get a tattoo?
Oh, wow.
Called a bunch of places. Finally got a hold of this one place. I think it's called Slave to the Needle. I wish I could remember the name of the artist. He was kind of new. He's like, yeah, I don't got anything booked. And then crushed it. Like, amazing job. Like, really did. It's one of my top favorite tattoos.
It looks fantastic, Casey. Yeah. And that tattoo is of today's tree.
That's exactly right.
The, and I mean the with a capital T.
Capital T.
White bark pine.
I love this tree.
This one feels big, Casey.
Yeah, does it? Why?
In a couple different ways. White bark pine is very popular.
Uh-huh.
We get a lot of requests for the white bark pine.
Yeah.
We also, this is our ultimate episode, our grand finale.
Exactly, correct.
On our four-act play about symbiosis.
Yes, it is. I think this is going to be a good one.
This is the where that we find out if it's a tragedy or a comedy.
Yep, here we go. Oh, wow.
I feel like it'll be a...
That was good. I hadn't given it that much of a thought, Alex. I want it, at the end of this, I'm going to ask you if you think it's a tragedy, this whole thing, or if it's a comedy.
Okay.
Now, we should define first. We're going like the Greek, the traditional sort of thing. A tragedy is where the protagonist does not overcome the conflict.
Correct.
A comedy is when the protagonist does overcome the conflict.
Correct.
Okay, perfect.
The protagonist in this episode being the white bark pine.
Yes, which is had no, there's no pine quotes around this. This is a dashless pine tree.
Yes.
Genus Pinus.
Pinus alba?
Albicaulis.
Albicaulis.
Yes.
White bark.
White bark, or like white outside.
Yeah, callus. I wonder if that's related to callus.
Yes, I think it is, actually. Okay. Yeah, very specifically.
There you go. Casey, let's imagine that you and I are walking through a forest.
An actual forest. And this is a forest here in the western side of North America. Alex.
There we have it. And we come across some Pinus albicaulis.
Yes, we do.
Casey, let's ID this monumental tree.
Monumental. All right. So it is a fairly small tree. About, like, the biggest one is listed around 21 meters. Like, it's not very tall. You know, that's maybe 60, 80 feet tall.
Yeah.
They don't get huge. They're not the kind of tree that's going to be out in a giant forest crushing it. They are the kind of tree that when you're walking around, you'll see these groves or these little pockets of trees. Very rarely an entire, like, continuous forest.
Oh, okay.
You're walking up and you see this gnarly looking, kind of short and stubby, very dense looking canopied tree.
Mm.
You can tell it's a pine tree. It's got needles. Those needles are in bunches of fives. It's evergreen, so you're going to see it all the time.
Five needle pine.
Yes. Well done.
Yikes. That's like not even a tongue twister.
So this guy, you're going to see it from a bit of a good distance. But you'll note that when you're looking at it, you are either at a very high elevation or you are looking up at a high elevation.
Okay.
They do not grow anywhere below probably, in most cases, 6,000 feet.
This reminds me of the bristle cone.
Yeah, it totally. This is the kind of tree that grows in the same area, same habitat, same thing, even has the same relationship with other species as the bristle cone.
How about that?
Yeah, very convenient and a very good observation, Alex.
Oh, thank you very much, Casey. Are these long needles? Like, are we got these big, bushy, long needles?
Very short.
Short needle pine.
Short needles, yeah.
Okay.
So you're walking up, right? You see this tree, bushy little pine tree. It has usually a big main stem and then sometimes others that kind of come from the base a little bit, or potentially two or three trees all growing from essentially the same spot.
Okay.
And they grow up and they kind of come out. They have a non-uniform shape like what you'd expect a pine tree. So a ponderosa pine, for example, grows straight up, one single stem, gets really tall, has that like triangular decurrent shape.
Yeah.
X-current. These trees have more of a decurrent shape where they look like big balls, where they have this big open canopy that comes out and does not have that usual central leader with a bup, 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 bup coming down. It usually have a bunch of branches and a bunch of lower limbs and things that kind of grow up.
Yeah, you know, when I called it the bristle cone, when I said it sounded similar to a bristle cone, rather,
yeah,
I was more right than I knew.
Yeah,
I am now
really
looking
does.
At photos of this white bark pine. Holy cow. This thing could be a cousin. I mean, it probably is, right?
Yeah, they are, actually. They're all five-needle pines, so they are very closely related. And being five-needle pines, they are usually have kind of soft cones. So the cone itself is usually pretty short, and five-needle pines tend to have cones that aren't like really, really rough and woody, you know?
Really?
I'll give you an example of the Monterey pine.
Oh, okay.
That is not a five-needle pine. That is a three-needle pine. Mm. And it will have a really hard, like almost softball size and consistency cone.
Okay.
You were just going to point at a cone, weren't you?
This Italian stone pine cone I have.
Three-needle pine.
Okay.
Yeah, so same thing as ponderosa pine. They have three needles. They have these big kind of like woody kind of bulbousy cones.
I like this softball metaphor.
Yeah, it feels like that.
But five-needle pines,
they tend to have really long cones, or cones that have scales that you can kind of move around a little bit. Like they are not obtrusively hard.
Sugar pine, five-needle?
Five-needle, but that one, they're really long. And that one is probably the woodiest of most of them.
Okay. Douglas fir?
Douglas fir? Oh, well, that's a trick question, Alex. I see what you did there. Just sliding that in.
Yeah, it was meant to be a trick question.
You did a very good job. I wasn't fooled, though.
The Douglas fir pine?
The Douglas fir pine? That's what they used to call it. Douglas pine. But this tree is really unique in that it has extremely white bark. It's a big thing you'll see also as you're approaching it.
I've got some questions about this bark, Casey.
All right. What do you got?
Is this, when I see it, when I see this white bark,
uh-huh,
is this actual bark or is this like underneath the bark? Like, does the bark shed and its skin underneath is white and then it grows dark again and then it sheds and it's white?
Yeah, it's actually mostly the young bark. In the young bark, the young twigs are very white and they stay white the whole time. But as they get larger and get older, it becomes a little more, not furrowed, but just thicker and grayer. It has like more little bits and parts on it that kind of look like little warts and a fissure here, a fissure there.
Yeah.
But they kind of have this more uniformly pine-ish bark. It's kind of the only way to describe it.
And now, Casey, I don't know if this is crazy, but is the white bark the reason they call it a white bark pine?
Alex, intuitiveness is a gift with you.
Yeah, I've kind of got the knack.
You got it. That's exactly right.
Thanks.
I don't know how you do this. Like, you just, you close your eyes and you're like, I get it.
Yeah. sort of like Neo in the Matrix.
Yeah, you just downloaded the genes of this, and you're like, I understand it now. Yeah. Everything makes sense. White bark, pine.
Yeah, I picked these things up pretty easy, Casey. It doesn't come that naturally to everybody.
So you get closer, you see that it has five needles, but there's another thing that you'll notice is that the five needles are kind of bunched up near the end. The big way to tell the difference between this and, let's say, it's growing very close to a bristlecone pine, which it doesn't always do it. In fact, I'm not sure that they have any significant overlap. Maybe one. You can find the white bark pine and the foxtail pine growing next to each other. Mm. But the big thing is that those, the foxtails and bristlecone pines, will keep their needles for like 20 years.
Right. So the whole branch is covered in needles.
Yeah, exactly.
Whole twig, rather.
Yeah. This one, they kind of stay tufted at the very end. They only keep them for a couple of years. And the thing with it is that they will have, you go over there and you grab it, you say, wow, I count all these needles. They're five needles. The needles are not splayed out. They're very tightly held together. Mm-hmm. So you can see that there's five needles, but they're like five needles that have not really, they don't want to get too far away from each other. They want to stay really kind of tight and close.
Yeah.
It helps keep them a little bit warmer up at these high altitudes that they grow. You'll also notice that you can take one of those twigs and you can almost tie it in a knot. They're extremely flexible.
Really?
Yeah, their younger twigs, very flexible until they become very old because they're at such high elevation. They grow slow and they're under immensely harsh conditions. So the old trees, the big parts, immovable objects. But the small bits are like so flexible that another tree that grows in the same area is called Pinus flexilis. It's called the limber pine.
Wow.
And you can actually tie its twig in a knot and leave it and the tree will be fine.
Whoa.
Yeah. You can't like cinch the knot down, then you'll certainly break it. But yeah, I've done it before without causing any damage to the tree.
Wow. Can you tie it in a bow?
That's a good question. I bet you can.
Can you also maybe throw it over your shoulder like a Continental Soldier?
I think you can, Alex.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder if it's like if it catches a tiger by the toe.
Wow, that's not even the same.
It's not? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe.
No, do your ears hang low? Do they wobble to and fro?
Oh, damn.
Can you tie them in a knot? Can you tie them in a bow?
Can you throw
them over your shoulder like a Continental Soldier? Do your ears hang low? We need Tobin Mitnick. Remember how he did his college English class on Humpty Dumpty?
Yeah.
We need him to do Your Ears Hang Low.
We do. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
It's probably about communism or something.
Hey, listen up and call us out. We want to see this.
Yeah.
Well, anywho, he also really likes these trees, just to say. We almost went and saw the oldest Pinus flexilis when I went down and visited.
Tobin Mitnick, a fan of white bark pine.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a fan.
Shout out to T-Bone.
Love ya. So the other big thing, obviously I've said, they grow at high elevation. And at that elevation, they have developed a very specific relationship with a bird. Now, I already talked about their cone being this kind of like small, not extremely woody kind of thing. And you can see my tattoo where they kind of look like they're little tightly closed up and like have these little points that come out. They look kind of tough, right? This is probably the thickest side of what a cone scale for a five needle pine would be.
Oh, okay.
They kind of get thick. They have pretty reasonably sized seeds. Where you know if you get a pine seed from the store or pine nut,
yeah,
you can eat that. It's about the same size.
Like okay.
They're relatively large seeds.
Okay.
And they have this big like hard shell around them. You break the shell and then you pull out this little seed. You need them. I've done it a bunch of times. They're great.
But you're going to need a tool to break that open, such as a beak.
Exactly. Alex,
I don't
know what you're doing. You're honest today.
Am I too transparent with my lead-ups, Casey?
You might have just listened to the interview we did at the end of this episode, so maybe you know. You're exactly right. So the cone, it does not open wide enough. The scales don't open wide enough for the seeds, the big seeds, to escape.
Right.
They are broken apart, and you can almost never find a seed from this species of tree inside a cone, or rather, you can never find a cone that has not been completely broken open by some animal.
Hmm.
Most of the time, it is a Clark's nutcracker.
The Clark's nutcracker.
Yes. Other times, like if it lands on the ground, a squirrel will get it. And if you're in places where there are bears, bears will get up there and just ever so gently break them off and eat only the seed and none of the actual cone.
Aww.
Yeah, they're apparently extremely good at just being like, glup, 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 and just eating just what they want.
Their long nails.
Yeah, their long nails and their little skinny tongues.
Oh,
very
wow.
Dexterous animals is what we're saying.
I love bears, but I also fear them.
Hey, that's a good relationship. I love you. I fear you. I respect you.
It's very Christian.
Yeah, very medieval Christian. Yeah.
Hmm.
Now I'm thinking about bears as like a medieval Christian, like kind of big thing. Like you put it on your standard when you go to battle.
Oh, yeah.
Sick.
That awesome. Would be like, I'd be a little afraid to go against the bears. I mean, aren't there a Game of Thrones family that is the bears?
Yeah. They're the Marmots, I think.
Okay.
Marmot,
yeah.
Jorah Mormont.
Jorah Mormont.
Yeah, bears.
Yeah, he looks like a bear.
He does. He's a good looking guy.
There's also Bear Island.
Yes, I think that's where they're from, isn't
okay.
it?
Oh, yeah.
I got to reread that book is what I need to do. Like, I just
read Game of Thrones?
I need to reread all of them.
Or Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, it might take me long enough to start at the very beginning. That by the end of book, was it five now?
Yeah.
Book 6/potentially 7 will already be out.
That would be pretty incredible.
Ugh, George R. R., stop it.
A lot of people say it's never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. He's gonna die before it happens.
Yeah.
Hope not. We're all praying.
Thoughts and prayers to George R. Martin.
Thoughts and prayers to George R. Martin. So these cones, they come out. They're always at the top of the tree. And what's funny is that this Clark's Nutcracker will go through and it has a beak that bends sideways.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh.
So it basically puts its beak in there. Exactly.
And it pries it
open and then it sticks its little tongue in there, blip, 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 pulls the seed out and then either eats it or stores it in its mouth and then goes over to a place and hoards it. They call it a scatter hoard.
That's absolutely incredible.
Where they make a big pile of them. They basically say, okay, this spot is where I'm going to put all of these seeds, like 10 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 seeds. And then they do it in another spot. And then they do it another spot and they do it another spot. They do it another spot. Now, remember our second episode way back when.
I was about to bring this up.
Yes. We were like, oh, these squirrels. I made the comment out of complete ignorance that I've heard that squirrels don't ever remember where they put their stuff. They just search where they think a squirrel would have hidden something.
That was one of our first big blunders.
Yeah, the podcast regretted the error.
We didn't know then that big blunders would just become a part of our podcast.
Yeah, literally 30% of it. So it turns out that the birds, the Clark's Nutcracker, do the same thing.
Okay.
Where they have joined into this relationship with whitebark pine. And funny enough, where they're at, the bristlecone pines, and they eat the seeds, scatter them in these hordes, and then they know exactly where they are. For the rest of the winter, they go back, dig them up, eat their seeds one at a time, and then we'll move on to their next hoard, move on to the next one. Sometimes bears will find these. Sometimes other critters will get in there and they're
sure.
Oh, sweet, found a big cache. But these birds are so successful with these trees that over millennia, they have joined, and this is our word of the week, into a symbiotic relationship.
Wow.
Yeah, who saw that coming?
This feels truly symbiotic.
Yes. This is, I would say, a true mutualistic symbiosis.
Yes. It doesn't feel parasitic.
Nope.
It doesn't feel... the other one?
Is there another kind? Parasitic, mutualistic, and then I'm sure there's a term for it, but I just never really know what to say, so I just say like a one-sided kind of symbiosis.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know the term off the top of my head. For whatever reason, all of my research, I have not actually been like, what is that called?
Right.
And you know what? We're doing this one live, so...
That's the 30% right there,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah, exactly. You guys look it up yourself. So this is an interactive, a choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing.
Yeah, this is the audience participation.
Yeah,
we forgot
exactly.
to do the research. You do it. So, Casey, you sat down...
Yes.
...with a very important person in the world of White Bark Pine.
I sure did.
Her name is Perry Sassnett. She's the host and producer...
Yep.
...of the Headwaters podcast.
Correct. One of the host and producers of the this podcast, put out by Glacier National Park.
That's right, a national park. So this is like a federal podcast.
Yes, exactly, which I kind of thought was fun. Like, I didn't know that they did it. I didn't even know that the entire system of the national parks would have like said, let's do this.
Yeah.
And I asked Perry this exact question, and she was like, well, honestly, a lot of people can't visit the national parks. Like, if you're in New York and you just can't afford to come all the way out to Glacier National Park in Montana, they wanted to basically tell those stories that usually you'd hear from, say, an interpretive ranger standing underneath a white bark pine, and they'll tell you about it. Instead, they decided to bring those stories to you.
Very cool. And we're big fans of this podcast.
Yep, listen to both episodes. Both seasons.
And we reached out to Perry, or Perry reached out to us.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
And you sat down with her to talk about the white bark pine and the challenges it's facing.
Yes.
And the plan moving forward. And we have that interview after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary. Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work. You know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth, and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well. And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
And I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained.
And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring.
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the white bark pine, Pinus albicaulis.
That's right.
Literally translated, the white bark pine.
The white bark pine.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of something else now. What? Alba.
Yeah.
White.
Alba. Albatross.
Albatross. Albus Dumbledore potentially is named after his white hair.
If you add up Albatross and Albus Dumbledore, it's 23. Oh my God.
Jim Carrey's seminal horror movie.
Oh, it's so good. It's just so good. I think one day I should go as that for Halloween.
Yeah.
And just like write numbers all over my face and my arms and everything.
I'm from the movie 4.
Yeah, I'm from the movie 4.
The secret prequel.
Walk over there. Oh my God, you have 2 speakers, 1 TV, and a game set. That's 4. That would be brilliant.
Well, Casey, as you mentioned earlier, this episode is the grand finale.
Yes.
In our series about symbiosis.
That's right.
What a wild ride it's been. And this is a great one to end on because this relationship between the Clark's Nutcracker and the white bark pine feels very wholesome to me.
Yeah.
It feels like it could be the basis of like a Pixar short or
something. Oh my God. That would be, I would love that.
Oh yeah, you would.
Just like a little pine tree that like, and this is, I would believe that Pixar could do this without like making the pine tree like the mother willow where it has like a face and it talks and everything.
Yeah.
Give it like a personality
for sure
through their storytelling.
Yeah,
the bird, of course, can have the best personality because you know they're the best,
and the bird's lineage can kind of grow up with the pine tree.
Exactly. Yeah. That sounds beautiful.
Tale of two friends.
And you know what? These birds have character. Like they talk to each other all the time.
Really?
I was camping amongst a grove of one of these in Northern California, and there was I was woken up at like 7 o'clock on the dot by a bunch of these birds around my tent. And there's like, bark! Like squawk and they fly away and they go to something and they squawk all about you.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't like it when you're in there. They're like grove. They're like, get out. But they, I think, were just kind of squawking. Then they moved on to another grove and then I got up and I moved away.
Did you see any bears while you were camping?
No, zero bears there. I don't think I've ever seen a bear or a cougar while I have been backpacking.
That's like my worst fear.
Oh man, it's what I'm waiting for. Really? Like it's on my to-do list.
To be encountered with a bear or a cougar?
Yeah, not in, I don't want, I think I should change that exact phrasing that you used. I don't want to be encountered by one because then it has been looking for me, you know? I want to see it on my own terms.
Okay.
Or if you do see one, like you're walking down, there's a bear in front of you. It's like, oh, huh. Like a black bear are really, they're not aggressive bears most of the time.
Okay.
Black bears, they'll get into your food if they have the opportunity. They'll come around, and there's all sorts of horror stories, of course, so given.
Yeah.
But in the math of it, the likelihood of that happening across the United States is like very, very low.
You just honk your horn, they'll run away.
Yeah, pretty much. They don't want to mess with you. They're just like, I gotta go. They've learned, most of them, to be afraid of humans, black bears.
But grizzlies.
Grizzly bears have no fear, and that is the one scary thing. Even indigenous people have like, that is the bear you don't mess with. All the other bears, you can kind of be fine with, but that's the bear.
Yikes.
Our entire existence is like, be careful with that. Those ones are scary, they're big and tough.
Oh my God, however, they're so strong and they're so big.
Yeah, but they don't climb trees. So if you just climb a tree, a grizzly will kind of look at you and then just they'll be bored and they'll move away.
Wow.
But they can't, or they don't climb. Black bears do climb. You just have to kind of be bigger and scarier and don't get between, you know, a mama and her cub kind of thing.
Sure.
So our friendly little bird, the Nutcracker, and our Pixar short about the tree and the bird.
Yes, yes.
You're right. It is a wholesome example of symbiosis, mutual symbiosis.
It's relationship goals.
It is. And the tree says, I'll give you this food. I think you're great. Just please don't eat it all, because I really need it to have, my children, to have a new little baby.
Right.
If you are that tree, your benefit is you are dispersing your seeds.
Yes.
If you are a nutcracker, which is funny enough related to like crows and blue jays and things.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Nutcracker's not actually a bird. Like a nutcracker's those things that you get, you know, for Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so a Clark's Nutcracker, I always think is fun. Like, I've never heard of a bird called a nutcracker.
I see.
Until this bird.
Anyway. Clark's Nutcracker is the budget ballet put on by...
yeah. Clark's. Nutcracker. Yeah, that's how you avoid the paying the rights to do the Nutcracker.
This is Clark's Nutcracker. It's different.
Anyway, Alex, this is... It's a definition.
Sorry.
It's a dumb podcast, I know.
No, that was a dumb input by me.
What? No, it wasn't. What are you talking about?
It was Clark's Nutcracker. I could do so much better.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you could do better, but that doesn't mean this was bad.
So. That's my goal. It's just like...
Okay.
Not great, but it could be worse.
Yeah, isn't that everyone's goal?
I reckon so.
Well, so it turns out, Alex, that I have given you a little bit of a red herring in terms of how this whole symbiosis was going to end.
Oh no!
The obvious thing here is that you have the symbiotic relationship between the bird and the tree.
Yeah.
Great. Cool. We did it. We talked about it. We got it done. It's the same thing as the ant. Potentially.
Sure, the ant from the...
Cecropia.
Cecropia.
Yeah, maybe not exactly the same, because then we had the discussion like, what is everyone benefiting? Is one not benefiting? This, it seems pretty clear, there's two benefits, but it's not so close of a symbiosis in that there's a couple different species that the bird could use. Also, the tree hasn't developed so explicitly that it's only this. Remember when we talked about the figs? There was a wasp.
Yes.
That wasp and that one species of fig
right.
were united and combined.
Yeah.
One existed, or if one did not exist, the other would also soon not exist.
Yeah.
That is some intense symbiosis. With these two birds and this tree, the symbiosis is there, but it's way bigger, Alex. And this is something that the Headwaters podcast really, really kind of brought into a larger kind of context, right?
Yes.
And what's important is that essentially there's two things that we're going to talk about that I talked about with Perry. The first is what's going on with this tree. What is the... what's going on in terms of this tree's survival? Because there's some things that are happening to it right now that are threatening its existence, which then, of course, threatens the existence of other things. And at first you say, well, shoot, that bird, the one Clark's Nutcracker in these areas are going to perish because the trees are getting affected by this disease called white pine blister rust, which kills the twigs and the needles. They're also dying because of mountain pine beetle comes in and bores into the wood and ends up killing the tree by girdling it essentially from the inside. And then you have climate change. These trees grow at the highest elevation. They grow where they cannot move up any further because they're already at the top. So these three things are affecting the trees. And what was notable is that if these trees perished, it would not just affect the birds. It would affect a giant cascade of everything else, which brings me to my my glorious conclusion of the question. Whoa. Is symbiosis something where we can say it's just these two things, or how far out can we expand the idea of symbiosis in terms of if I and a whole ecosystem are all kind of dependent on something, or we have what you're going to hear in a second called a keystone species. Mm-hmm. What exactly, where exactly can we put that definition of symbiosis? If one tree species is a keystone species in an entire ecosystem, does that make the entire ecosystem and the tree in a symbiosis?
Well, Casey, now we're talking.
Well, let's listen
this
in.
Boy, have the stakes been raised.
They sure have, Alex. So let's give a listen to a couple clips here that that we got from our conversation, where we should note, if you want to hear the rest of this talk, this is just some snippets.
That's right.
We have that on patreon.com. Go to patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
That's right. The whole uninterrupted, uncut.
It's insane. Unrated.
All the deleted scenes are in there.
Yeah. Everyone's going to watch them.
The 4-hour Snyder cut.
So let's listen in and hear what Perry had to say about what a keystone species is and what's going on with the white bark pine.
White bark pine is a keystone species, and that's why everyone's so worried about the threats that it's facing and its decline, is that it's not just like, well, it's a tree, it has things that depend on it, but they can find other food sources. Its role in the ecosystem can be filled by other things. Like, no, it has so many links to other species that rely on it for food. It's important kind of in forest structure. Like, it lives at the very top of kind of where trees can live in the subalpine. And the way that Clark's nutcrackers plant the seeds, it's often one of the first species to come in after a fire. So it's kind of a pioneer species, and then can support other trees coming in afterward. Its big canopies help shade the snowpack so that spring runoff is a little bit slower, a little bit less chaotic. We've certainly all seen the effects of chaotic spring runoff this year.
Yes, we have.
But yeah, there's just so many links to other species, and the seeds in those cones are just such an important food source and such a rich source of protein and fat for so many species, including people. And so if we were to lose white bark pine, it would have, pretty huge effects.
Yeah, definitely. And so right now it's white pine blister rust and is it the mountain pine beetle that's doing this?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Diana Six, who we talked to, described it as a three-legged stool that white bark pine's kind of sitting on. And then these three threats, the pine beetles, blister rust, and climate change, are each kind of chewing away at one leg of that stool.
Yeah, and that was a really interesting way to describe it, where if any one of those things kind of takes over, then the tree's kind of toast. So the three-legged stool, really, I think that exemplifies it very well, just that triangle of doom.
Right, yeah. And like, maybe it could fight off one if not for the presence of the others, and they all kind of combine to be more than the sum of their parts in attacking the species.
A three-legged stool
of doom,
slowly being gnawed at by three different enemies. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really curious thing, where you think of a stool, and if one of those things is like goes away, everything else collapses.
Stool's falling over.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be more than one of them. Any of those three things could cause the destruction.
Yeah.
And the other thing that she brought up is that this is a keystone species. All the things that relate to this really intense ecosystem at these high elevations are predicated on the existence of these trees, or at least they have a really huge impact on a bunch of things that cascade down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that makes me wonder, I think we could bring symbiosis and put it more on this intense spectrum where everything kind of maybe in less of a direct way than an ant boring into your pith or a bird being the only thing that distributes your seeds. If there are other animals that or other ecosystem functions that happen because this tree exists, mm-hmm. then you take that tree away and those things stop to cease to exist. Or at least are changed extraordinarily. She noted there's no other trees to take over. There's no other kind of functional thing that'll take over this area. If you're in a lower elevation, you lose all your pine trees, your firs and your spruces and your other things are going to come in, right? So it was really curious where it started to get me thinking that a symbiosis at a certain level exists, and that is the basis, the most fundamental sort of relationship in an entire ecosystem.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay, great. Rad, man.
I don't know.
I feel like that's sweet, dude. Like, I know, Alex. It's a big concept.
No, yeah. I mean, that's what you're encountering with me right now is that it's such a big concept that I'm sort of like stunned. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah.
It's like, okay, could we do that? Or does that change the definition of symbiosis?
Right.
I don't know. Well, so I decided to ask then what it is that the folks at least the National Park Service are doing to try to keep this keystone species in place. So keep this symbiotic sort of cascade functioning. Let's hear what Perry had to say.
There are tools kind of that address these different problems. So for the pine beetles, what we do is we go out and put these little verbenone packets on some of these key trees. Verbenone is a pine beetle pheromone that they release when they have occupied a tree. It sort of says, this tree's taken, find your own tree. And so we can put verbenone, little packets of it, on trees that are, we can't put it on every tree. But on those key plus trees, those big old cone producing trees that are really critical, our vegetation crews will go out and visit those trees every single year and put those little packets on in the spring. And that kind of helps protect them from pine beetles. So that's like pretty straightforward. The blister rust kind of mitigation or how we're fighting it is way more complicated, but basically there's a whole restoration program that is working on basically harvesting cones and seeds from those plus trees that have been resistant to blister rust thus far, with the idea that if you plant these trees that are naturally blister rust resistant back on the landscape, those hopefully have a better shot at persisting and surviving and kind of repopulating the whitebark pine population. So they harvest the cones with those seeds. They raise them in a nursery in Coeur d'Alene until they're, I think, a year or two old, and then they plant them back on the landscape. And that's just to give them the best shot at survival.
Casey, it is heartwarming to hear that there are like teams of people combating, you know, trying to duct tape up the legs of this three-legged stool.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, and it really is, and it's really nice to see that as you listen through the whole podcast this entire season, they bring in people from all the different communities, the tribal communities who've been with these trees and maintaining them and living off of them as a food source for millennia, as well as the people who live there now, as well as the visitors to the park and the actual park people like doing the work.
Yeah.
So it's this big multi-pronged effort. And you also have like biologists and horticulturalists like making these things happening, saying that's the tree that has the best resistance. Let's breed it and put it back on the landscape so that we can kind of speed up what nature would be doing if we weren't speeding up the time that nature needed to do stuff. You know
what
I
mean? Yeah. It's also kind of like a, it's sort of a marker of like how important these trees are.
Yeah,
to exactly. See that there are so many different groups of people fighting so hard to keep them going.
Yeah. it really makes you kind of put into perspective like this, what this symbiotic relationship is,
yeah,
like what this keystone species term means. We use it a lot for a lot of different things. It's a common thing in ecology to use this term, keystone species.
Okay, yeah. Can there also be animals that are keystone species?
Oh, most definitely, yeah. Okay. Where, like, if you can see a certain animal in certain waterways, then that is a keystone species, that it's a healthy waterway.
Oh, like okay. That. It's a signifier of something.
Exactly. It's a signifier of a lot of larger processes. Okay. I can't think of any others, or I don't want to say them because I might get them wrong, but, like, wolves are a keystone species kind of thing.
Okay.
Or like certain frogs in certain habitats, or sure, crawdads in water, or clams in certain water, like these kinds of things.
It'll tell you that habitat is healthy and sort of operating properly.
Precisely. And okay, they're also keystone in a way that a normal keystone, the term of course comes from an arc, where if you have an arch in a building,
yeah,
the keystone is that middle one, where if you pull it, that very top one, it's usually like wedged shape,
mm-hmm,
then the whole arch falls apart.
Right.
It is staying together because of that keystone. So if you take that keystone away, the entire system fails.
It's a really good visual analogy.
It really is. I remember as a child, I went to OMSI, the Museum of Science and Industry here in Portland.
Love OMSI.
They have one of these with little foam things, and you can build up your own arch.
Oh, yeah.
And then put it together. It's like, wow, oh my God, this... It totally makes sense.
Wow, I haven't thought about that in 20-some years.
Hey, we should go to OMSI After Dark sometime and go do some cool stuff.
That would be great.
Yeah, it's OMSI for adults.
Hey, let's host a completely arbitrary OMSI After Dark evening.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
We all get together and go do some OMSI stuff.
Hey, you heard it here first, you guys. Writing it down. So during our conversation, mm-hmm, I asked Perry what she thought was the most fascinating thing about this entire project.
Yes.
And her answer, I think, is really, really important in terms of kind of giving the trees themselves a little bit of credit.
Interesting.
And so let's listen to what she had to say.
Hey, if there's one thing we like here, it's giving trees credit.
Oh, exactly. Whether or not they really want it.
I think some of the genetic stuff was most fascinating to me. Like, I'm a geologist, I took high school biology, but that was not really on my radar as part of this story. And so, like, I remember sitting on this hillside near Preston Park with Diana Six.
Casey, who is Diana Six?
Diana Six was one of the interviewees that Perry talked to. Diana Six is an entomologist with the University of Montana who's doing work on the mountain pine beetle, which is, of course, affecting the white bark pine.
I see.
And she looked out over this huge U-shaped glacial valley full of trees and said, you know, there's more genetic diversity and more difference between all these trees out here that look exactly the same to us than there would be if you went to a concert and looked out across a stadium full of people that all look totally different. And I never really thought about it that way before. And she kind of framed it in a way that, like, the genetic diversity within the species and within that's kind of held within some of these really old trees is one of the big hopes for white bark pine. And that's just a way I'd never thought about conservation or restoration or trees before.
So is the idea that because there's a broader pool of genetics that they have more to, like, select from to try to find resistances to these things?
Yeah, kind of. Where if you have an entire population and you have diseases, then if you have a low genetic diversity, then the disease will affect them all essentially the same.
Sure.
So if you don't have resistance, none of you are likely to have resistance. Conversely, if there's a high genetic diversity, it's very likely that one or two of those individuals in that population, or several, some percentage,
mm-hmm,
will have some resistance, you know?
Okay. Okay, so the higher genetic diversity, the higher percentage of those trees will be resistant. Is that the idea?
Very likely. There's a higher likelihood.
I see.
Correct. So then if, in say, in this case, white pine blister rust comes through,
yeah,
it kills all of the trees except for a few that are resistant, those resistant trees will be able to survive and basically start the whole population anew. And then that creates, unfortunately, you lose a lot of the genetic diversity that died, but each one of those trees is so unique and different from the others.
Uh-huh.
that as soon as you get some kind of cross-pollination, there is just this huge amount of diversity within each individual tree and across tree populations.
And this new population that grows after most of them are killed will more likely be resistant to the blister rust?
Yeah. In fact, it would be resistant.
Okay.
Because that's the only reason it survived.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow is all you can say. So that's what these that's what these people are working on. And I thought that Perry saying, or talking about Diana Six's comment that you look out at a forest, each individual tree has more genetic diversity within itself, that the whole crowd of trees is more than a whole crowd of people.
Kind of spooky.
Yeah, we're almost exactly the same in terms of genetics, whereas the trees are vastly different. So a tree standing right next to another tree could have a whole different grouping, a cadre of resistant properties that the one next to it just doesn't have.
This is kind of a nice, this is kind of a side lesson to take away, Casey, don't you reckon?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, they may all look like Douglas fir, but they're as different as you and me.
Yeah.
I don't look in a mirror and go, is that Casey?
Exactly. You know? But these trees probably do. They look in the mirror and they're like, whoa, this is, could be anyone.
Casey. I don't know who that guy is. Trees don't have mirrors.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Well, unless they grow next to a pond.
You know
like
what?
Narcissus.
I was thinking that. Yeah. Or like they're looking down. Yeah. Okay. So, you know what? We take that back. The podcast regrets the error. Trees do have mirrors.
A madrone growing over a calm sea, of course, has a mirror.
Duh.
Wow. We have the, we're going to get canceled.
Yeah, we are. Mirror cancel culture. Well, so there's one last clip that I want to play from our interview, Alex.
Yes.
And it makes me, mainly, I just want to talk about sort of how this plays out with symbiosis, because my theory, my kind of thesis that I'm working with here is that symbiosis can be enlarged to an entire ecosystem.
Right.
And the big like kind of bow on top of that in terms of how you and I are can change our perspective, all of our listeners can change our perspective, is that if we people are a part of that ecosystem, we are a part of that symbiosis. You remember when we talked a few times years ago about breeding sweetgrass?
Yes.
In that book, she specifically brings up, this is Robin Kimmerer.
This is terrible, but it's sitting unread on my bookshelf. I just have a big back catalog, Casey.
You're getting to it. No worries. Yeah. Well, in that book, they talk about specifically a reciprocal relationship, which read symbiosis between plants and animals and humans and those animals and humans and those plants.
Of course.
So I had one last question for Perry, and we talked about this one last time.
I think this story in particular helped me start to see things more in terms of relationships, like relationships between species, relationships among whole ecological communities, and to see people as part of these ecosystems. You know, like, we have a relationship with these ecosystems and we are part of them. Like, we're not separate from them. And it's easy to think of ourselves as, again, like, we have so much power to affect ecosystems and to shape them to be how we want, that I guess in a way it's less scary if we don't think that we're part of them because we do so much destruction of them. But we are, you know, we rely on plants to feed us. I'm wearing a lot of plant fibers right now. You know, I live in a house made of wood. And so, yeah, Sheena Shah put it really well. She said, we take care of plants because plants take care of us. And so to frame it as a relationship that is reciprocal was, I never really thought about it that way. Like, that's something that I didn't learn in my scientific education, you know, as a grad student or whatever. You observe, you study things, you learn about the natural world, but to see humans as part of it was really different.
We take care of plants because plants take care of us.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's and true. So that to me, Alex, is a perfect way to end our series on symbiosis. Yeah. Where we can look at it to the nth degree and see microbes working with trees, fungi working with trees, microbes inside trees, and plants and insects, plants and birds and animals, everything. And if we just keep going out and get bigger and bigger, then an entire ecosystem is essentially just a bunch of interconnecting chains of symbiosis. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's a symbiosis of a very specific direct thing, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, our backs are both scratched. It could be that the back of mine is getting scratched by something else, which is getting helped by something that's getting scratched by that thing that then comes back around. And because the sun shines over here underneath this tree,
yeah,
then this grass grows and that other thing ends up eating that. And now my back is scratched.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
was that clear?
Yes, weirdly.
Yes. As I scratch my back.
I suppose you could make a link between any living thing.
Yeah, exactly.
By what it interacts with and or has a sort of even passive symbiosis with.
Precisely.
Or secondhand symbiosis,
you know? And then that has to include humans.
Yeah.
And that, to me, goes back to a bunch of other things that we've ever talked about. Religion and ecology, where we have to change our otherness to nature in order to put ourselves back on a track of not destroying it and ourselves.
Yeah.
Because we are all a part of it. The symbiotic relationship between humans and our environment is you know, the most important one for us, but it also happens to be the most important one for almost everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take care of one, we take care of us. There is a reciprocal relationship, and that is symbiosis.
Casey, let's get into our review.
Let's do it, Alex.
Of the white bark pine. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree, then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Symbiotic cones of honor.
Yeah, exactly.
As our resident
symbiote,
we will begin with you.
Alex, I'm happy that you began with me because I'm going to set the stage for this.
Wow.
I love this tree.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful tree. It grows in a beautiful place. It is a altruism rating of 5 out of 5.
For sure.
It is just, it doesn't like do any of these other things. It's not the oldest tree. It's not the biggest tree. It's not any of these other trees, but it's like Atlas, where it's Atlas and Methuselah all at the same time. It's clinging on to the side of a mountain and having its liver eaten out. It's also a tree that is holding up the world on top of it.
Yeah.
Sorry, did I miss up my Greek Greek things? Isn't Methuselah?
No, this is perfect.
Yeah, okay, thank
you're
you.
You're thinking of Prometheus.
Oh, dang it. It's Prometheus. Rewind. No, it's like Methuselah on the side of the mountain. And at
Prometheus.
The same time, God dang it. It's like Prometheus.
Oh, my Lord.
Anyway, I'm going to give the white bark pine a 9.9.
That's incredible, Casey.
I think they're amazing trees.
Yeah.
I think they do the coolest thing. I think they have this complexness that is so subtle and understated until you look closely,
mm-hmm.
and then you're like, oh my God. Like, this entire ecosystem is dependent on it. And then that cascades down through everything else.
Yeah.
And I think they're also beautiful trees.
Yeah.
There are only a few trees that I get, like, really excited about when I see. This is one of them.
For sure.
There's my rating. That's what I think.
9.9. That's incredible, Case.
GCs of H. As our other resident symbiote, Alex.
Yes.
Take your time.
The white bark pine. Obviously, you know, going into this, I didn't know thing one about the white bark pine.
Yeah,
okay. I've always mixed it up with the eastern white pine.
Oh yeah, very different.
Yeah, I think just because they both have pine and white in the name,
which is pretty good.
That's right.
Hey, you know what? You got to draw a connection somewhere.
The level I operate.
You've been hitting the connections this entire episode, so I'm not surprised that you're also getting more.
I think the relationship with the Clark's Nutcracker is pretty stunning.
Yeah.
I love what Perry and her team and all the other teams are doing.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of work going into saving this tree is pretty incredible, and therefore saving many other species that rely on it.
Yeah.
Or species that rely on those species, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, the scratchers of the backs. Exactly.
And it all comes back to you and me sitting in this apartment recording this podcast.
It sure does.
It all affects all of us.
It does.
There's something very beautiful and very sad and scary about that. Because at large, the world is not being treated so well. Hmm. I think that's probably an understatement.
It's a fair understatement, though.
There are some potential moves happening in United States legislature right now that could help that. Mm-hmm. A lot of things are saying that there's a bunch of underwritten bullshit going into it as well. Mm. Maybe a step back, two steps forward. Maybe two steps forward, one step back.
Yeah.
Either way, that's a whole other podcast.
Whole other podcast. We'll get there.
I am going to give the White Bark Pine a really solid 9.0.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Like a really strong, sturdy 9.0.
No matter how you look at it, no matter how you skin that cat, it's a 9.0.
No matter how you skin that cat, says Casey Clapp. Casey,
ways.
Because we both gave the White Bark Pine
Yay!
9 plus cones, I will now play the
plus niner.
Yeah. What is that called? Do we have a name for this song?
I think we call this song we technically don't, actually. But you know what? But I think I want to call it the I want to call it the double niner.
The double niner. Written definitely by Alex Croson.
You should beep that part out. Written definitely by
White Bark Pine. We salute you.
That was beautiful, Alex.
It's kind of a grating, annoying sound, isn't it?
No, I love it. It gives me a chill of gratitude every time.
Oh, yeah. Hey, thank you so much to Perry Sassnett for sitting down with us and talking about the White Bark Pine.
Absolutely. And everyone at the Headwaters Podcast for getting in touch and making this happen.
Yeah.
Just very lovely conversations.
And go check out that podcast, Headwaters, presented by Glacier National Park. You can find it, I think, anywhere.
You can. Yeah, wherever you get your podcasts, you can also go to nps.gov/glacier/headwaters or something very similar to that.
There you go. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This one comes from the Patreon. A bit of a trend
there
we're setting here.
Well, I mean, these are good questions. Good questions.
That's right. This one's from Sammy G.
Oh, hey, Sammy.
Hey, Sammy. Sammy asks, if you could go back in time, to visit any period of geologic time, i.e. Cretaceous, Devonian, etc., which would you choose? And why? Casey, I had to look up from the Digital Atlas of Ancient Life.
Ooh, okay.
I have this eon era period and epic.
Okay.
Or epoch, I've also...
Yeah. I think it's either one, but I love epoch. I, for whatever reason, the hard E's, P's, and C's, I think sound great.
And I've got a list of things here. So, you know, you've got the Cenozoic, the Mesozoic, the Paleozoic... Okay. In those, you have your periods. Okay. Those are your eras. And, of course, you have your eons, which are even bigger.
Yeah.
Right now, we're in the Phanerozoic.
Ah, okay. Yeah, eon. That sounds about right.
Proterozoic was before that. Archaeon was before that. And Hadean?
Yeah.
Before that?
Yeah, okay.
That was about 4.54 gazillion years ago.
Yeah, that was way back when, as they say, in the olden days.
Yeah, that was DWD.
Yeah.
WBW is what I meant to say.
I don't know what either of those are, so I didn't know you got it wrong the first
way
time.
Way back when.
Oh, where's the D?
That's what I fucked up.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that helps. Thank you.
So, Casey, obviously the Jurassic is in the mix. Well, I have an answer for this.
Okay, what do you got?
None of them.
What? Alex never wants to go back in time?
No.
Oh, God. Come on.
The past was terrifying.
Oh, jeez.
I would never, ever, ever. I would want to watch it from afar. I would love to see it through a lens of some sort. But you, there's no, you couldn't pay me $1 billion to spend five
really?
Minutes on Earth in any of these periods.
Wow, that's not what I expected.
Terrifying.
You're just like, no, I get this. I'm good here. Time, thank you.
Giant bugs.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're gonna find dinosaurs.
Velociraptors probably out
yes.
there.
Yes. Sometimes, I mean, regardless, the atmosphere is gonna feel different. Maybe you'll suffocate.
Yeah, you will certainly. There will be snakes.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's going to be snakes.
Giant snakes.
Yeah, and also other kinds of snakes.
Yes.
You're probably also going to have to deal with the, not necessarily suffocating gases, but, you know, there was a lot way more volcanic in certain periods.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. It could be like poisonous air.
Yeah.
Also, it was way more humid. It was humid and hot back then.
See, I need some air conditioning. Yeah. I can't go out there. I'd be sweating head to toe.
Honestly, I love that idea where, like, you see, like, past, present, like, movies, and everyone's like, they're doing really well. Like, they kind of adapt really quickly. It's mm-hmm. like, man, The Rock really knows prehistoric time. It's like,
right.
Okay, that's good. I'm really glad The Rock has that. But I also love the idea of seeing Alex Croson in prehistoric time just walking through and be like, oh my God, what are all these vines? They're so sticky.
Everything is trying to kill
sweating
you.
Sweating through your shirt. Yeah, I think that would be, honestly, like, that seems like something the Mighty Boosh would do. Like, you know, old show where they just put these people that don't belong in a place where they don't belong.
I didn't know you've seen the Mighty Boosh.
Love the Mighty Boosh.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, it's so good. See, I'm cultured, Alex.
That's a deep cut, too.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
So what do you think, Case? Where would you like to belong here?
Okay, I have two answers for this. The first answer is like 15,000 years ago, maybe 15 to 20,000 years ago.
Okay, so we're talking Pleistocene?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the late Pleistocene.
Okay.
I might prefer to go back a little bit further to like the middle Pleistocene.
Sure.
My rationale for this is twofold. One, it's early enough that I can still recognize everything that's out there in terms of the plants.
That's a good point, Case.
So if I go back to then, I would be able to identify every single plant that I can identify today.
And?
Probably a bunch more.
You'd probably even see some cool animals that didn't go extinct that long ago. Some giant sloths, some ground bears.
Glyptodonts. Yes, 100%.
Ground sloths, I think I meant to say, not ground bears.
Ooh, yeah. There's short-faced bears.
Yeah.
Well, no, not all. Some bears like to hang out up in the arbors.
They don't have flight, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I gotcha.
Mastodon.
Yep. And all those like amazing, crazy animals that went extinct coincidentally when humans came over into North America, came down into Australia, and these kinds of different pressures on the ecosystem caused these changes. We're not going to say what those pressures were, but they were there. Yes, I 100% think that would be the coolest time. I have a second answer, though. That's okay. My first answer.
Yeah.
That gives me the opportunity to go back and be like, I see how it is. Like, go up to Seattle and be like, whoa, check it out. This is what Seattle used to look like.
Sure.
Before they did everything that changed Seattle, you know?
Right.
Obviously, the biggest issue is that it would be way different. It would be like unrecognizably different because the water level is going to be higher or lower. Like, those kind of changes would affect it. But you could probably still pick out a lot of the same stuff.
You know, if I could do like a Christmas Carol type thing.
Oh, get taken by a ghost of Glyptodon past.
Yeah, nobody can see me or sense me, and I could just sort of sit and experience what it smells like and what it sounds like and what it looks like.
It smells just like Papa's dinner.
this Glyptodon urine.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you there.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That's sort of the conditions I would set for myself.
Okay. Well, so I have one other answer.
Okay.
It would be about the time that Ginkgo and Metasequoia were like at their peak.
Okay.
So this is about the end, 65 million years ago was when the dinosaurs kind of went out off the table?
Yeah, the beginning of the Cenozoic era.
Yes, the end of the Jurassic.
Yeah, Cretaceous.
Cretaceous, okay. Yeah. So I would love to go back to the Cretaceous, I think.
Okay.
Because it would be fascinating to see something now that I can't recognize anything but a few species.
Yeah.
See the widest majority of, let's say, the Archaeaceae. Like, see what they all look like, where they all came from. See all the other pine species and fake pine species that are growing over in now what we know as Japan.
Yeah.
But back then, they were all over the Northern Hemisphere, all the way into what is now North America.
It'd be fascinating.
I would love to see, like, so far away that it's like, oh my God, this is what the Don Redwood used to look like in these giant forests of Don Redwoods in Araucaria. And like, oh wow, there's a nascent little maple kind of tree that's just growing up. That would be...
That'd be cool.
Yeah, I can't decide which one I would prefer right now. So,
well, that's Christmas Carol. He had three of them, so that, there's your picks.
Oh, yes. The other, but the third one was in the future, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, so...
All right. Yeah.
Let me know how that goes.
Anyway, this has been completely arbitrary from
I have
past.
One more answer, Casey.
What do you got?
I would love to see, like... I guess I'll call it the Hadean. The Hadean.
Okay. Way back when.
Which was when the Earth was just like volcanoes.
Yeah.
Just like made of volcanoes.
That'd be sweet.
I would like to see just like the most primordial, like, you know, just goop floating around.
Yeah.
Volcanoes. I don't know. It was like right after things just started getting going.
That would be fun if you could also like kind of speed up and like just jump forward by years and years.
Have a little scrubber that I could go, oh, let's go forward by 30 million.
Yeah, but you can watch it all happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would be totally with you for that. That would be honestly like Genie comes down right now. I would ask for those three wishes. I might ask for two of those and keep a third one in my back pocket.
For sure.
You know, just in case.
You're going to want that when, you know, the I don't know. You're going to want that.
Yeah, it's going to be, we're going to need it. We're going to need it. Yeah, so.
And you can't afford a flight to China, but you really want to go to China. I wish I was in China.
All right, you got it. Oh, man, that'd be good.
Thank you so much, Sammy G, for your question. Hey, any relation to Ali G, you think?
No, actually, I know this person. They are related to Kenny G.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. They're all cousins.
Yeah, world class.
If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com or join the Patreon. That's kind of how we're trending lately due to some news that we will share later.
We're very excited.
About the Patreon. Or support the Patreon. I guess that's and support the Patreon. Yeah. Continue supporting the Patreon. Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You get bonus episodes. You get Cone of the Month Club. We'll send you cone stickers illustrated by independent artists every single month.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Clapp.
Alex Croson.
A big thanks to Perry and the Headwaters team.
Yes.
A big thanks to everybody working so tirelessly and passionately on the White Bark Pine issue.
Yes.
A thanks to you, Casey, for sitting down with Perry and bringing that interview here to all of us.
Of course. And thank you, Alex, and everybody out there for listening to this Odyssey, our four-part play. The question of the day, Alex. Has this been a tragedy or a comedy?
I believe it's been a cliffhanger.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much for listening to Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.